accession number 22113, rail 4.
Trevor Jones, rail 4. So, we know where you were on VE Day, so did you, that you immediately stopped fighting? I mean, did the Germans in this officer training school, I mean, did they go on fighting?
The attack never went on.
They never went
Everything
on,
stopped.
Right, so you just stopped.
But I tell you one thing, funnily enough, rumour has it that the patrol of Germans went through our village that night and two military policemen were killed. And the war ended the following morning.
What,
whether that's true or not, I can't... German patrol. I don't know. Rumour.
Yeah. So you were all absolutely elated the war was over?
Well, we were all drunk. You see, I used to have an issue of a pint of whiskey every month as a sergeant. And I was never a drinker. I used to keep it. I also used to get an issue of rum occasionally for in the bad weathers. And I didn't use that unless we had to. I used to keep it for days when we... So consequently, we used to carry flasks in the armoured car. You put soup or water in 2 pints. And I had a 2-pint flask of rum and a bottle of whiskey. So you can imagine when we heard that, the celebration that went on.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So you stayed in the same area then, till you were...
No, we moved then down to... as I said, we ended up in a little village called Sulz. S-U-L-Z-E. Mm. Not far from Celle, which is quite a big town in Germany. And also a few miles from Belsen. And that's what I was telling you, we rounded up all these German dignitaries to see the mass burial of the people from Belsen, where bulldozers were literally shoveling the dead into open graves.
Awful thing.
Another thing which was I can't forget is the number of young girls, 13 and 14 perhaps, or even younger, walking about with, you know, eyes were dead, walking about aimlessly, but all pregnant.
Really? Were these in Belsen or...?
In Germany.
In Germany, generally.
From Belsen.
Oh,
or from the camp.
From the camp, yeah.
Well, they must have gone through there.
Yes.
Really.
Anyway, we spent a few pleasant months at Sulz, played football and generally relaxed and enjoyed ourselves.
Did you have anything to do with the policing of Germany, you know, once
no.
peace was
We were on what they call the mobile reserve, for, because, if I remember right, a lot of the Polish that had been conscripted to work in Germany, you know, a lot of the Polish workers were revolting a lot around that area, and they were having a bit of their own back, in other words, you know, and our reconnaissance being mobile, we were used as to quell any trouble that started, you know.
Mm. And those were the Polish workers, were
workers.
They even used as labour, yeah. Did you see much of displaced persons?
Oh, yeah, I've seen a lot of them.
Because
They
seem to be everywhere, and they seem to be very unpopular, weren't they, some people?
Right.
Did you have any contact with the Russian military at all?
Once. I think it is on Lüneburg Heath we met them. And I was frightened. We met one of the Russian tanks. And I remember there was a big piece cut out of the turret where the shell had obviously a close hit. But I remember the Russians themselves. They didn't trust us and we didn't trust them. I got a feeling that their hands were always near their guns, you know, always. Although we exchanged cigarettes, I was glad to get away from him.
Yeah.
I had a feeling that things would blow up in a jiffy. That's my only contact with them.
Because there were lots of stories about the Russians being very cruel to civilians and so on, weren't there? They seemed to have a reputation.
Well, having seen the battle for Stalingrad, I can imagine that too. See, whatever the Germans had done to them, they asked for it. They brought it on themselves. Because the treatment they gave to others was deplorable. Although, mind, in this village of Sulz, there was a wandering German soldier that attached himself to us, and he became our cook. Our Sans Mess cook.
Yeah.
Good cook, too. Very good cook. And a nice job.
Yeah.
And he was an exception.
Yeah.
He had his wife there in the end before I came home.
So he should have been rounded up and sent off, should he? But you kept him as a cook, didn't
yeah,
you?
Well, I think it was absolute chaos in Germany. You've got no idea. Mm. I mean, Berlin was rubble. Mm. People living in terrible circumstances, but...
Did you manage to get any things on the black market? Because, of course, you've got cigarettes, haven't you?
I didn't get into Berlin. Mm. We ended up in Sulz, and Monty came to sell it for a decoration. He put that medal on me.
Right. So what did you earn the military medal for? You haven't told me that.
Well, I did no more than any other. Because if there was three men in a car, what I said had to be done, the others did it as well. So it wasn't right that I should have one and not them.
But there must have been one incident, was there?
Well, I was a sergeant. Yeah. I decided what to be done.
Yeah. But was there one incident for which you got the medal?
This is what I had the medal for, but it's not. I've done far better things, or worse things, which everywhere you look at it.
This is from the 43rd Recce book again, isn't it?
I can't think of now. Sorry, I'm so long.
That's all right. That's no problem at all.
I've gone beyond.
So this is from the 43rd Recce book, the chapter Cleve Forest, page 164. Just before B Squadron began to move, division said that the regiment must not move on any road east of the Cleve Udim road because of the divisional gun line. Thereupon, B Squadron was ordered in the event of meeting opposition on the main road to bypass it on the west, and A Squadron was told it would probably not be required. A little after 1300 hours, B Squadron moved out, five troop commanded by Lieutenant Ballsden, the leading car patrol under Sergeant J.T. Jones, had advanced only a short distance beyond the forward infantry positions when the leading car commander spotted an anti-aircraft gun in some farm buildings near the road. Sergeant Jones, having withdrawn the patrol behind cover, went forward on foot and confirmed the existence of the gun. Shortly after this, Lieutenant Ballsden became a casualty, and Sergeant Jones took over command of the troop. Moving forward alone in his car, he directed artillery fire to such good effect that the building in which the 88mm was located received several hits and was set on fire. While he was directing this fire, Sergeant Jones's car was fired on by three machine guns situated in the buildings near the road. He engaged them until he was forced to withdraw owing to a stoppage of his Beezer. Then Sergeant Jones noticed that some of the infantry were being fired upon by these machine guns, and he moved forward again. He drew the fire of the guns deliberately and engaged them again. He was now under heavy mortar fire, but he continued to engage the enemy, putting two buildings ablaze and silencing the enemy machine guns in them. His prompt action enabled the infantry to evacuate their wounded. He had to withdraw with another stoppage in his gun, but later he moved up again and engaged the third MG until it too was silenced. Sergeant Jones won the MM for this action.
Yeah.
That's quite something, isn't it? Do you remember that incident clearly?
Well, I bound to.
Yeah.
Although I did far more dangerous things than that.
Well, it sounds fairly dangerous. Keep going forward and you were drawing the fire.
I remember once we were held up in a village somewhere in Belgium, I can't remember where. And anyway, I used my initiative, which we were told to do, and I found an old railway line that had been disused for many, many years. And I thought about it because it is looping around the left of this village. And in the end, I decided to have a go, and I went down this. And you can imagine going over the sleepers, boom. And I remember the thought I had when I was halfway down this line, damn if they open up in the snow, you're sitting ducks. But it came off. I went around, came into the back of the village, to all intents, captured the village, and I came up in the air and I said to Tom Carter, my CEO, come and join me for tea. Coming in. And the only time he ever came up in the air and he said publicly, well done, One Evil. That was my code name.
Yeah. So, I mean, you never shrank back from going in and capturing villages and going in to see what was there. I mean,
well, that's our job. Yeah. We were reconnaissance to find out. Yeah.
But not all reconnaissance, I'm sure, were as brave as yours.
Oh, they were all the same.
Really?
I mean, don't think... Well, I'm no braver than the average soldier, believe me. Because of my troop...
Don't you think you pushed forward further than some people?
Well, reconnaissance, our wireless said you worked up to a limit, you could go up to a limit of 15 miles, which meant you could be 15 miles in advance. It didn't always work like that because they weren't always that good. But when I look at the policemen over their little walkie-talkies and I think of my wireless set was that big, and I couldn't even get 18 miles with it.
Amazing.
Anyway, shall we...
Okay.
I've reminisced enough now.
Right, okay. So at the end of the war, you got your discharge. You were waiting eagerly, were you, to come back?
Yes, we were all waiting to come home. I think that if I hadn't been away so long, I probably stayed in.
Yeah.
Because I liked the army.
If you hadn't married me...
I could have...
See, he said...
I could have taken...
You were a single man, yes.
I could have taken a commission.
Yeah.
I was offered it.
Yes, offered it, yeah.
I remember Tom Carter, one of the officers, I said, no, I am me, an officer, I said, I need another a secondary education. And I remember his words, what else? He said, you were doing the bloody job now, he said.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's 50 years ago.
Yeah, so you came back to England.
And I didn't have a scratch.
Yeah, amazing.
But you know, when I was cleaning out my armoured car, days after the war ended, I used to always carry a little tin of margarine, packet of biscuits, and in the back here, there was a little slit hole that you could look through because my car had a dual steering, back and front. And in the back, there was a tin of biscuits. And when I was cleaning those biscuits out a couple of days after the war ended, there was a hole in the biscuits, in the tin, and a bulge where it came into my back.
Really?
And inside was a Spicer bullet.
Really? So you were saved by a tin of biscuits.
Taking care of it.
Yeah, you were saved by a tin of biscuits. Mm. So you came back and you were demobbed, I suppose. Was that a pleasant experience?
Oh, well, glad to get home.
Yeah, right. Where were you demobbed?
I came from Germany to Hereford.
Oh, right. You were demobbed there.
Hmm.
So you came back to Wales, yeah? What did you do then?
Well, the problem was jobs. Because remember, millions had been called up in the army and millions were coming back into Civil Street.
Because you'd gone away a boy too, hadn't you, really, and come back a man. I mean, you'd learned a lot in the meantime. Yeah.
I'd learned a lot in the meantime, yes. I'd grown up a lot. I remember our doctor, when I went to see him a couple of weeks after I came home, I had a rash on my arms here and on my hips, didn't I?
On your feet.
And I remember when I walked into his surgery, he was a good chap, Dr. Watkins, one of the old family doctors, you know. Do you know, when I had that leave I told you when we got to the Rhine, I thought, look at this, I've been a good soldier all the years, and, you know, the war had ended then. And I was due to go back around Christmas time. What a time to travel all the way back to Germany. So I went up to my doctor's. And he was... when I went into a surgery, I told him what I wanted. I didn't mince matters. I said, I want a couple of days extra leave if I can. And I remember his words, and he's been dead many years. You're a bright bugger, he said. Do you know who I am? He was the military doctor, you know, for that area, this area that people... trying to work...
Yeah.
Tickets and that, you know, and extra leave.
Yeah.
And he said, let me ask you two questions, he said. How long have you been in? And I think I told him, you know how long I've been in. And where are you stationed? I said, in Germany. 6 days, 7 days, he said. But anyway, to go back to when I saw him after I came home from the army, I had this rash on my arms and legs. I'd had it for quite a while. And I remember him saying when I walked into his surgery, "Good God, man," he said, "relax you like a piano wire." And then he said, "Do you know," he said, "you can't expect to undo 6 years of army in a matter of days." He said, "Take things easy, quietly." Anyway, I went to see a specialist about this rash on my arms and legs, and in one of the hospitals in Cardiff. And I can remember him feeling in my hair. I had a good head of hair then. And he looked at the back of my neck. And he went around and sat in his chair. And he wasn't much older than me. And he said, "My boy, you were bloody lucky." He said, 9 out of 10 people coming home from the war suffers in some form or other with nervous reaction, nerves, tension. In your case, he said, it's coming out. Those who keep it bottled up inside are going to be far worse. Go home, he said, and relax. Don't give a damn about anybody or anything. And indeed, it went in 6 months, didn't it, Van?
Yeah.
But I wonder if the same thing applies today as applied then, where these police officers are getting huge sums of money for stress and trauma. I think I'll put a claim in.
Yeah, yeah. So did you have, apart from the rash, did you have, you know, big difficulty readjusting?
No, I was lucky.
Any nightmares?
Oh, I had a few.
Yes.
Oh, yes. So twice I woke up screaming, didn't I?
Yeah.
Not a weekend.
And funnily enough, that wasn't...
Was it when you were in danger, or...
Pardon?
Was it the fright of when you were in danger, or...
No. The worst nightmare I had was that big white apparition I saw.
Oh, no.
Remember?
Yes.
I used to wake up screaming.
Yeah.
I dreamt I was cowering in an alcove. And this white apparition was coming up this hall towards me. And my hair was literally standing there. I was petrified. Oh. And I woke up screaming. Oh. And I know what it was. Oh. You know when, before General Horrocks and Monty gave the orders for Arnhem, the airborne, to go, they were on a factory building not far from where I was. I saw them both on this building. And it was a lovely summer Sunday afternoon. And I should have mentioned this earlier on. Anyway,
Where was this?
In Belgium somewhere. The day before the big push for Arnhem started, the Sunday when he gave orders for the airborne to drop, there'd been 2 days of no firing on our front. And everybody had orders to pick up every gun that was fired at them and pinpoint them on the map. And on a Sunday morning, when Horrocks and Monty decided to start the airborne invasion, the idea was that the Guards Armoured Division would go up, push up this road through Nijmegen and on the way to Arnhem and link up with them. And on the Sunday morning, before he gave the orders, every gun position that was spotted in that area and pinpointed on the map had what they called time over target. Every gun, regardless of size, fired so the shell would land at the same time. Can you imagine 600 guns landing in one... There, whoom, 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 whoom. I'm going off my subject, point now about this. Anyway, the point is that with all that heavy bombardment they give, when he gave the orders for the Guards Armoured to start going up this main road to link up with the airborne, they lost 6 tanks before they went 100 yards. The Germans were still there. But this operation I had, the name Hechtel, it's in Belgium somewhere, comes in the way. There was a monastery there.
Monastery, I meant.
Uh-huh. And a big mound outside the monastery and one small one.
And
the day before, apparently, or a couple of days earlier, I think it was the guards, but tanks had surprised Germans in that area and captured about 30 or 40 of them. And they were all standing with their hands up like this. And this is the story goes, mind. The officer walked down from the tanks up on the hill, only a matter of a few hundred yards, to disarm and see that these prisoners were... And one of the prisoners had a grenade in his hand. And as the officer came close, he went like that. And he killed the officer, and the tanks opened up and killed a lot of them. But what I do know is there were two mounds, one big one and one small one. Yeah. Anyway, I got to this monastery and I was looking for a place for us to stay the night. And the light was going, it was getting quite dark, dusk. And at one end of the monastery, there were stone steps going up to an upstairs floor. And I, you know, the torches we had in the wall weren't that powerful. Anyway, when I got up to the second floor, there was lines of beds. Plenty of room for my whole troop. No linen, mind, but just the beds.
Was that where the dog was barking?
No. And as I walked down this big hall, I only went about 5 or 10 yards. My beams of the torch wouldn't reach the far end. The door at the far end was creaking and slowly opening. And this apparition in white stood there. And that's my dream, see, that's my... And I can say now that my belly was about this high. And it turned out to be only one of the monks that stayed behind. And he welcomed us with open arms. Nice job. But I now have forgotten. I was scared. I was scared to death. And that was one of the dreams I had.
So how do you think the British Army treats its old soldiers?
Very poorly. My biggest complaint is about the Ministry of Defence itself. I think they are a load of... Well, I won't use the word. It's on record, I know. But take what they're doing with this paratrooper that died in...
Sierra Leone.
Why shouldn't his girlfriend have a pension after him? No, I think, like this medal of mine, once you're finished, I don't know. I mean, why couldn't somebody have given me my medal in my hand instead of sending it through the post?
Duke or a Duchess or somebody today.
But I find that the Ministry of Defence, they are completely heartless. Completely heartless. And they're probably all staffed by people who never seen a gun fired in anger.
What did you think about the American troops? You know, what was their...
What little I saw of them, I admired them, especially down the Ardennes. Because my job was for 2 days was to go around different American units to find out the extent of the breakthrough. From Monty eventually put in a counterattack. But without any... Oh, and they were cold on that, the Americans. They were in these slit trenches and their feet was wrapped in all bits of rag. I mean, I was mobile and I was cold. I was frozen to death. But them, I still remember them. But without any exception, they all told me to be off. We let them in, we'll stop them. And I admire them for that.
Really? Yeah. And what about any other troops? And what did you think of the German soldiers as their ability as soldiers?
You're very good soldiers, Richard.
Good soldiers, I suppose. Are they no different to us? The German and the Englishman, whatever their nationality, man is man. But you always get the bad ones and you always get the good ones.
I've seen in every country.
I've seen a few bad ones and they were youngsters. But when we went to Yeslo on holidays, the chap in the next chalet to us, he was a German officer.
Yes, and like that man.
And he was a hell of a nice chap. He looked for me to go swimming in the morning, didn't he?
Like that chap. The first holiday we went.
Oh, that is Ostend.
Yeah, and his son.
I see. Everybody got grudges, Eva.
The father had his leg off in the war. Yeah. But believe me, he thought his son would be similar to himself. Because he was so nice to Trev, and they were talking about the war and things like that. Yeah. However, when his son came out of the cafe, it was, and saw us talking, you should have seen his face.
Well, I found that the average German I met around Seltz and Belsen, they were obviously never said the truth, because I believe they did know what was going on in Belsen. And for anybody to condone that is shocking. But they made themselves affable. I didn't have much to do with them in that village there.
Who did you go to war to fight? Did you go to fight Hitler or the Germans or Nazism?
I went because I had to. I was called up. But when I see this picture of the old king with a beard, remember, your country needs you.
Yeah.
I will tell you what I'm tempted to say. If people who start wars had to fight them, there never would be a war. I mean, you can talk about the killing that went on. Do you know, I saw a tapestry in a place in Germany somewhere. I forget where it was. It is as big as that wall. And it is the four services, Navy, Air Force, three or other, and soldiers. And they were riding horses and they had skulls instead of heads. And there was an apparition by the side. Oh, I'm going back a long time to try and think of it, but the text of the drawing was armistice.
Yeah.
Coming out of death into life again. Because,
yeah.
You know, as long as the war is on, you're in a living death. Because you don't know if the following day will be your last day. Yeah. And this picture depicted, showed the German soldier, sailor and airman coming back to life then, if you like.
Wow. Rather like the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
That's right,
yes.
Yeah. Now, I've seen a tapestry of that, and it is really as big as that wall. But where, I can't remember.
Yeah.
No, I've heard you say about it before, but I can't remember now.
So it's been very, very, very interesting, very valuable. Is there anything else you want to add? I mean, I know you... Are there any other people that you
still... Am I still on here?
Yes.
Well, do you know how much those 6 years meant in hard facts? £90. That's what I came home with, and a new suit. £90. I ended up going into the army with the Queen's shilling. And I was earning 2 shillings a week or 2 shillings a day, I can't remember. But as a sergeant, I was earning 14 shillings a week. And all I had coming home was £90, wasn't it, Ben? After 6 years. And I was meeting people who was laughing and saying how well they were doing during the war years, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Youngsters who had stayed in the first job I had, a friend of mine, he's a solicitor in Perth at the time, he got me a job in Treorchy with EMIs doing electrical, I forget what they were, but my boss is a youngster in his teens. He'd been there since the war and he hadn't even been to the army.
Yeah.
He was giving me orders.
Yeah.
And you know, I mentioned Sammy Balzan, one of the finest chaps I've ever met. He lived in Biddeford in North Devon.
We went to visit.
And we used to correspond after the war. And when I heard that he was ill, he'd had a stroke, my wife's in-laws and us, we decided to make a holiday in the Northwest at Westwood Hall. And the express purpose, as far as I was concerned, was to go and see him. And one of the letters he wrote prior to me seeing him, because he didn't last long.
What job did you do after the war?
I came in the post office.
In the post office, right.
Mm.
Okay, and you stayed there. Yeah. All right. Excellent. Well, it's been absolutely fascinating.
Pardon?
It's been absolutely fascinating. I don't know whether there's anything else you want to add. Or...
I wish, with hindsight, that I'd stayed in. Because the army life did suit. I'd be a fool to say I liked the fighting part of it. I'd be stupid. But the life itself, because I was interested in sport, it really, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I think if I had stayed in, I'd have made a good, because I was offered the commission.
Yeah.
But all we could think of when the war was ended was to come home.
Yeah, that's a good epitaph, isn't it? So.
And that is worth £90 to me when I come home in my pocket.
Yeah.
Oh, and a new suit.
And a new suit. And a hat, I expect, as well. So that's John Trevor Jones, End of Reel 4. And thank you very much indeed. It's been fascinating. Thank you.